In December of 2005, Tracinda Fox's apartment building in the Bronx caught fire. And with the flames quickly engulfing her third floor bedroom, she was forced to contemplate the unthinkable. Outside, a group of onlookers had gathered some 30 feet below her open window, and they watched with growing concern as smoke billowed around the mother and her one-month-old child. With no fresh air in the apartment, Tracinda leaned out the window with her baby. Finally, with all other options exhausted, she let go. The infant tumbled three stories down into the waiting arms of Felix Vasquez, a housing authority employee who was also a catcher on a local baseball team. A former lifeguard, Vasquez performed mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on the baby until paramedics arrived, which saved its life. Moments later, Tracinda was rescued from her apartment by firefighters and was reunited with her child. Neither was seriously injured. Asked later about the painful decision to drop her baby from the window, Tracinda said, "I prayed that someone would catch him and save his life. I said, 'Please, God, save my son.'" She faced that ultimate kind of decision in letting go. She could cling to her child, but without any assurance that they would make it alive out of that smoke-filled building. Or she could risk everything with the chance that the baby might live. You've learned this already, I know, and some of you who've lived longer know this really well, that life is actually a series of ongoing events where we must learn to let go. And the life of the Christian, especially, is concerned with that kind of journey. Do we go on clinging to things, or people, or dreams and desires, or do we release them to God? With the only assurance that God loves us and wants what is best for us. It's hard. It can be hard. If I were to preach this sermon 20 years ago, it would be very different. If I preach it in 20 years from now, it will again be very different. Today we move fully into the season of ordinary time in the church year. That doesn't mean it's just like nothing special. It's set over against extraordinary time. And the extraordinary time is the time that we begin at Christmas, or just before Christmas, and we follow the big kind of events of the Christian year, the life of Jesus, and, you know, kind of the high points. But ordinary time is the 6 months that stretch out after Pentecost that lead us up through, I mean, for our calendars that we think about, through Halloween, basically. That time of deep growth. Time of putting down roots, the time of spreading out our branches. If the church year from Advent to Pentecost is like the new roller coaster at Six Flags, Goliath, then the season of ordinary time is like taking a train from Chicago to the West Coast. Most of it's flat. It rises and it falls in certain places, and there's some great scenery, but for the most part, it's about the journey itself. Not so much the thrill of certain destinations or certain hills and turns and stops along the way. And we begin this six-month journey with scriptures that highlight this theme of letting go. Every one of these passages we had today dealt with that in some way, or in the blessing of God, in places where we just don't understand. It sets the tone for what will come ahead in the next 6 months. It reminds us that the path of discipleship is a path of relinquishment. So often God says to us, "What's that in your hand? What are you holding on to? What are you depending on? Let me have it. We naturally resist. We pull closer because we don't believe that what he would have to give us in exchange is so much better and more beautiful and more true. But it is. It is. Abraham is the father of the faithful. In fact, three of the main religions of the world look to Abraham. You knew that, right? And he had to come to this place of faith and trust in his own life. He had to walk this journey. And before we have Hebrews 11, which is that great hall of fame of faith, and, you know, Abraham looks pretty good in Hebrews 11. Before Hebrews 11, we have Genesis 12 through 25. And we see the humanity of Abraham there. We see his cowardice. We see his manipulation. We see his fear. But we also see his integrity. And we see his willingness to obey God. Now, a number of our readings over the coming weeks will be taken from Genesis and the story of Abraham's family. So when you get tired of binge-watching things on AMC or the latest stuff on Netflix this summer, you might want to take a look at the book of Genesis. It has highs, it has lows, it has tension, it has murder, it has intrigue, betrayal, drama, romance, and a whole lot of grace. It's the perfect summer novel to read at the beach. So read ahead. But today we're looking primarily at Abraham. I'm going to use his name Abraham. You know it's Abram, then Abraham. So I might jump back and forth, but we know who we're talking about. You might remember, and we're going to rehearse some of what's come before Genesis 21, just to kind of give us the setting. You might remember Abram was called by God to leave his country and head out. Remember, he didn't know where he was going. God didn't say, I'm going to give you the GPS. He just said, I'm going to show it to you as you go. I'll tell you when you're there. And that land, that place, would be given to him and to his descendants to be a great nation. The only problem, he didn't have any descendants. He was 75 years old, and he had no children. He wasn't even particularly religious that we know. He was pretty much a pagan. He didn't have much context for God. God just said, I choose you. And guess what? He went. He obeyed. But years after this promise of descendants had been given to him and his wife Sarah, they were still childless. They had a promise. They didn't have anything that showed that the promise was true yet. And it had been a long time. It had been many years. And Sarah wanted a child desperately. So in kind of a way to help God along a little bit, she offered her servant girl, Hagar, an Egyptian, to Abram as a wife, with the thought that if Hagar got pregnant, then Sarah could raise the child as her own. And you can read about this in Genesis 16. In fact, there's a way in which Genesis 16 and what we read today are very much held together. But Abraham found out keeping two women happy is not an easy deal. And Hagar got thoughts above her station. She did get pregnant. She did have a child, and she thought, I kind of like this being the woman of the house. There was a lot of tension on the home front. And Sarah treated her servant harshly. But God made promises to Hagar about this child, this boy named Ishmael. This boy was Abram's firstborn. But remember, the boy was the result of them taking matters into their own hands. God had promised a child through Sarah. And now, here was Ishmael. Abram's son, of course, but in a sense, an engineered offspring. And that's the background now to our passage, a brief background to our passage in chapter 21. When we get to chapter 21, we see that God did keep his promise to Sarah, and she has a child. And she bears, in her old age, a son named Isaac. He was the child of promise. He was the child that would be the one through whom the covenant with God would be honored. The one whose descendants would be God's people, special people. So when he's about 3 years old, that is when he's weaned, we think that's probably a good guess of age. When he's about three, Sarah notices Isaac playing with Ishmael. The text says he was mocking. We're not even sure what that means. What's a four-year-old do to mock? I mean, it's just, but she did not like it. Did she? She just couldn't handle it. She saw them playing together, and the rivalry got to her. So she demands that Abraham send Hagar and her son away. So Abraham's faced with this terrible demand, and he's deeply troubled. He is distressed. I mean, it's a terrible thing, isn't it? Think of it. Isaac is the child of promise, but Ishmael is also his son. He's the firstborn. But interestingly, God takes Sarah's side on this. And he speaks words of comfort to Abraham. He says, "Don't be so distressed. Don't be so distressed. I will make the son of the slave into a nation also because he's your offspring." So you can imagine the scene of this sending off. There's no words. No words are given. Abraham just gives some food, a little water to Hagar and Ishmael, and sends them off into the wilderness. All his life, presumably, he had wanted children. Certainly since the time of promise. Ishmael was his oldest child, and now he was put in a place to have to let go. God and his wife had ganged up on him. And now the son that he loved was cast away. You know, we're not given much detail. It's a really short, you know, it's bare, isn't it? It's bare, the language and everything about it is. But we know that Abraham was genuinely torn. He was really having to choose between his sons. He was able to do it only with the word of God, only with the promise of God that said, "I will take the child. I will care for the child." And you know, it kind of makes sense for Isaac to grow, for the covenant to be established and honored. Ishmael had to be in a place to form his own people. Sarah saw this. We don't like it from our culture, but I think it kind of rings true in that setting. Something had to be done, so Abraham releases the boy to God. It's hard to read this. It's hard for me to read this. How do we make sense of it? You know, it's complex. It's full of human initiative. It's full of human motivation. But it's also full of God's grace as he chooses to work out his plans through human beings and some of the decisions that humans have already made. Isaac is God's idea. Ishmael was Abraham and Sarah's idea. But God honors Ishmael anyway. Abraham has to let him go, though. I think there's a lot in this for us. And for the many things that we are asked to let go of as we follow God. Ideas of what our life should be like. Outcomes that we hope will emerge. Actions of other people that we cannot control but want to. Solutions that we have engineered in our own strength and energy that are precious to us, but that aren't really what God had in mind for us. And you know, we grow through letting go and giving these things to God. Jesus says, if you're going to grasp your life, then you're going to lose it. But if you're willing to lose it for my sake, then you'll find it. Rich Mullins put it this way in one of his songs. He said, "Love is known in what is given up more than in what is kept. Love is known in what is given up more than what is kept. God does not lead us to relinquish our plans to him because he's a sadist. And I say it that way because there are some people who think that. God's out to get me, to ruin my life, to make my life miserable. God desires to bless. And as we have open hands to receive what he has for us, he gives us the fruit of his promises to us. Now, there's discernment that's needed because there are some things we should never let go of, right? Some people are letting go of the wrong things. Faith in God, one another, commitments we have made, friends that stick closer than brothers or sisters, that's a biblical picture. Jesus said, if you're compelled to walk a mile with someone, walk two. We can't just say, well, we're going to give that up. We're going to let that go. We're going to let all the demands of the kingdom go. No, we need discernment because some things should never be let go of. But in the end, all of our life must be released to God in trust and in hope. Do you think Abraham never thought about Ishmael again? What do you think? Do you think he just released him and thought, he's gone, I don't think about him? I don't. Do you think Ishmael had completely gone out of Abraham's life? I don't. In fact, after Sarah dies, Abraham marries again, and he has other children. He has numerous children, but when he dies, Isaac and Ishmael come together to bury their father. It's in Genesis 25. Abraham still loved Ishmael. That's my idea anyway. I actually believe that when God later calls Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, he's able to obey God and offer up his son because he'd already done it. And God blessed this surrender. So that's the first point of the story today that I see in this, is that there are things we're called to give up. It's part of being disciples, of walking and following Jesus. But thankfully, it's not the end of the story. Because the second part of the story is that God cares for Ishmael and Hagar in the wilderness. And you know, the language here is very interesting because Abraham sends them out. They wander in the wilderness. God provides water for them. I mean, the language is just like the Exodus. Just like the Exodus of Israel that we'll read later. It's the language of Ishmael being sent into the wilderness. In the wilderness, God hears the boy crying and comes to his rescue. He restates his promise of nationhood. He provides water in the wilderness. Genesis tells us that God was with the boy as he grew up. God cares for Ishmael. He doesn't set him aside. He doesn't cast him away. As Walter Brueggemann puts it, even though he was not the one elected, he was treasured. I think we don't tend to think of Ishmael that way. We tend to, you know, flick, you know, and no, this is part of Abraham's family that God made promises to as well. When we release things to God, the things he asks us to give to him, he takes and cares for what it is. He brings his goodness and his blessing and abundance to the situation. It's so hard. It's hard to let go. It's hard to give to God. But see, this is what the grace of God makes possible. We may not see what we desire to see. Our plans may not come to pass in the way we want to see them, but God can do far more that's redemptive in situations than we ever can. Whether this is about career, whether you're dealing with things today about career or children or spouse or friendships, in the end, clinging and seeking to control can only complicate what God desires to do. So today, to bring it down to where we are, is God speaking to you today about letting go of someone or something? Is there a situation in your life where you've exhausted all of your options? Is there something in your life that's just a mess? Is there sin to be relinquished, as we heard about in Romans? Then this is an opportunity to begin to grow and to set free the power of God to act without putting conditions on it, without putting prerequisites on it, saying, God, I give this to you. I release this to you because I trust you. You know, this is something we talked about at length yesterday during our healing retreat, which was a great time. We had over 20 people participate in the afternoon retreat. Is that there is a need sometimes for us to take our hands off certain areas of our lives, to give thanks to God, to live out of gratitude and allow God to work and to work in us, but to let go. It's like coming to communion. When you come to communion, you have to set down the things that you're holding on to, whether it's a cup of coffee or water bottle, or, you know, you come with open hands. And the communion minister places the bread in your hand. It's a picture of how we come to God. God says, let go of that, just release that, and then receive what I have for you. Here are some statements that I found that I like, I want to conclude with about letting go. To let go is not to care for, but to care about. To let go is not to fix, but to be supportive. To let go is not to judge, but to allow another to be a human being. To let go is not to be in the middle, arranging all the outcomes, but to allow others to affect their own destinies. To let go is not to deny, but to accept. To let go is not to nag, scold, or argue, but instead to search out my own shortcomings and correct them. To let go is not to regret the past, but to grow and live for the future. To let go is not to cut myself off. It's the realization that I can't control another. To let go is not to try to change or blame. It's to make the most of myself. To let go is to fear less and to love more. To let go is to fear less and to love more. May God grow our love and grow our willingness to release to him the things that he says, give to me, and I will bless you. Amen.